there has been an increase of intercommunal violence of late. Now, many people have lost their lives if you've been following their stories. Well, there is a flare-up violence in Abia, and there has been clashes between armed attackers from the Twitch community of Warab State and Ngok Dinka in the Abia Special Administrative Area. These attacks have been happening since January. Now, in other areas, cattle camps have been attacked, leaving some people dead and others injured. All this points to a challenge in South Sudan as the country is set on uncharted territory of its first democratic election. Now, joining us this morning here in the studio, we are glad to have Mr. Moses John Mande, who is the executive director of the organization Nonviolence and Development. We want to talk about the challenges that are facing the journey to sustainable peace in South Sudan, and also how do we start or resolve our issues by not going violent and trying to attack and kill our very own people. Joining us, as we said earlier, is the executive director for Nonviolence Organization and Development, Mr. Moses. Good morning, and it's good to have you always on the Miraya Breakfast Show.
Good morning, Sebit. I'm very glad to be part of this conversation in the morning here. Thank you so much for having me.
And I'm sure you have been following, especially the last 2 weeks, where we've had seen quite a spike of communal violence.
Yeah.
We've seen killings that has been happening in the country. First of all, what's your take on all this?
It's very unfortunate. First of all, from the moral perspective, the people of Aube are our people, and they have a special status in CPA. And all of us as communities of South Sudan, we need to demonstrate solidarity with the people of Aube, because the people of Aube, they are yet to determine their political status. So from the moral perspective, I don't see it fair for other communities in South Sudan to attack the people of Abia. The people of Abia actually deserve respect. They deserve to be actually given all the solidarity needed. So in regards to what happened, regardless, what I'm saying is actually regardless of whatever reason, the people of Abia should actually, they deserve our solidarity as our brothers and sisters, given the historical background that we are one people, actually.
So, but of course, here we're not saying, in other words, whether the people of Abia were the one attack or they are the one attacking.
Yes.
There's no blame game here.
No blame game.
We're basically saying, like, the issue of conflict shouldn't be, you know, violent, or where people can die.
Exactly.
Let's start with the challenge, of course, that is right in front of us. Why does it seem to be a problem to stop these fights among communities that has been happening, not only in the Abia region, but let's talk about the whole and general in South Sudan? We've also heard about in Jonglei, particularly in a place like Kobo, in the news that, you know, some people were killed, and this has been happening over and over again. Why is it really seem to be a problem to stop these fights among communities?
One, you know, some of these, or if not most, they actually have their under root causes, and there are underlying causes that actually aggravate those conflicts. And it is important that those root causes should be studied thoroughly, so that we understand as to why communities, these communities fight each other. Historically, we know that most of our communities, they have been living side by side, you know, in peace. And why now, for example? Why do they fight now? So that's one. Two, of course, there are a number of efforts that has been undertaken, whether by private actors like us in the civil society, by other regional and even international bodies. They have supported initiatives, actually, to restore peace and reconciliation in those communities. Yet the conflict keep on actually escalating from time to time. So what is the problem? You know, from a human perspective, like, if you keep on, like, taking medication for a certain disease and then it keeps on coming up, it means you need to go for further investigation. Until the cause of the problem is found, I don't think you will get well. So that's the thinking that I am having regarding our communal conflict. Something somewhere is still hiding.
It's not right.
It's not right. People have not actually identified it. Until we identified it, we can't actually put those conflicts silent.
You did mention that historically most of these communities have been living side by side. There seem to be absolutely no problem among themselves.
Yes.
What could have gone wrong? Could there be politics involved now? Politicians getting in, trying to divide the people? I mean, where has it gone wrong? If they were living together peacefully before.
If I can take from in the past, yes, I am not saying in the past there are no total conflicts. There are some few cases of conflicts where communities clash and fight. But they fight with white weapon. You know, spears, you know, arrows, bows, or even stick, you know. And the casualties are not that many as we are seeing today. Today, most of these communal conflicts, they use machine gun. The question is, where do they get the machine gun from? Because if you don't have any, and then even the, you know, the poor young boys who are involved in such communal conflicts, they don't seem to have any hard currency account. Then the question is, how do they get those weapons? You know, something is wrong somewhere. We need to really find it out. Because, for example, if the machine guns are denied from the communities, you know, even if they fight using the using their hands or sticks, the casualties will not be as many as it,
as it is now. Talking about those guns and all that, just in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state recently, like last week, this week, over the weekend, we've heard and, you know, of stories where civilians overtaking actually organized forces and killing national security, killing police in the process. They have sophisticated weapons. I mean, where are we heading?
Yes, that, these are some of the unfortunate situations. And of course, that is the consequence, actually, of community having actual weapons. Weapons are being regulated by the government, you know, through the concerned authorities. So that's actually one challenge. From what I know in the previous, I think last year, there were efforts actually to discuss the comprehensive disarmament of civilians. And which, if it is done in good faith and done in a very in a right way, it can contribute actually to somehow minimize the conflicts that we are seeing now. So the other reason is people also ask, why is this conflict escalating in January and now February? You know, we know this is a dry season. But most specifically, we expected actually the beginning of this year to be peaceful throughout the year, so that because we accept there are a lot. Actually, this year is we have a lot of actually like national activities that are supposed to move this country forward, and therefore we don't see any reason why communities should actually escalate conflicts during this time. So this actually is giving us another image that that actually a lot of efforts needs to be put in place, because most of what we want to do this year cannot happen if communities are fighting.
We'll talk about that, what we want to do this year. I believe you're talking about the elections that is supposed to happen this year now.
And also constitution making, for example.
Indeed. Now, the national leadership particularly met on Monday, and they came out and spoke against intercommunal clashes. Is this enough?
I would say no, it's not enough. Of course, their leaders, since they have already spoken together, I believe that they have plans on how to handle this. So let us encourage the leadership of the country to now move forward in order to address those issues. Because we, as the people, we really don't see any reason why communities should fight, and that we should keep on losing life. Losing life is a very serious issue, because our constitution clearly says every person has the right to life, to live. Now, and that right needs to be protected, so that at least our people can actually live in peace. And that's what we voted for independence for, in order to live and enjoy the fruits of this country, not to die.
Now, most of these classes, of course, since they are kind of localized, they're happening in the counties, they're happening in the state levels. Do you think the authorities there are actually able to contain this particular situation, fightings and conflict, or this is a responsibility of the national government?
Governments has levels. For example, at grassroots level, we have boomers, we have payams, we have counties, we have states, and we have national government. Actually, every level of the government has a role and duty and responsibility to contain conflicts at that specific local. But once it gets like overwhelming, then it gives much more reason to the state and the national government in order to intervene. The way we are seeing the escalation of communal conflicts reaching at this point of time, it actually requires the intervention and direct support of the national government so that this communal conflict actually can be put to rest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Moses, you and I agree that this has been going on for so long in the country. We've lost hundreds, if not thousands, of South Sudanese to this kind of communal fighting and conflict and killings that is taking place. And one thing for sure that hasn't come out clearly is holding the perpetrators accountable for the acts of this violence that has been happening. What role do you think impunity has played here when it comes to the continuous fighting in our country?
Impunity is actually part of the problem, because if the perpetrators, for example, if anybody thinks my actions has no consequence, that's already a problem by itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a double problem. Because you kill a person and you know you will not be held accountable, it means killing will continue. So actually impunity is one thing that actually needs to be addressed as well. And I'm happy, as part of the revitalized peace agreement, there is Judicial Service Reform Commission and other, there are efforts actually going in that line. We need to hold perpetrators of communal violence accountable. You know, regardless of their positions, you know, if you are implicated, you should actually pay for that. Otherwise, we can't stop what is going on now. So accountability is very, very important. But even before accountability, I want to recommend we should really have a kind of a strong oversight and monitoring mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Because even before accountability, you need to monitor who attacked who, you know, using what kind of
weapons.
How many people were involved? How many people were killed? So we need that kind of monitoring and mechanism. And once that is established, then the next step is to hold the perpetrators accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing so, I think we'll be able to somehow minimize this issue. One success story is actually Lekki State. We have seen Lekki State in the past. It was also, I think, second to Jungle when it comes to conflict hotspot in the country. But Lekki State, I was in Lekki State some few months ago. It's peaceful, generally peaceful. Of course, even if there are some cases, but it is generally peaceful. How did the people in Lekki State and the leadership in Lekki State manage to at least contain the you know, the communal attacks in the state?
Yeah.
And I understand other neighboring states are trying also to take the example, learn the example from Lekki State in order to bring peace to the state. That's actually something we should also celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you there, because previously in our programs here, and reports of Lekki State killings, sometimes over 60 people weekly dying, you know, due to communal fighting. But yes, that number has reduced. Stay with us, Moses. We'll get back to you, of course, and continue looking at the implication of all these particular conflict to the programs for this year. Of course, you did mention about the constitutional making process and as well the elections that are supposed to take place, but that will be coming to you after the news headlines that is coming to you shortly in the program. Good morning.
Back to future. Breakfast Show News Headlines.
It's 8:30. A budget of 160 billion South Sudanese pounds has been approved for pre-election activities. The money was endorsed by the High-Level Standing Committee for the implementation of the Revitalized Peace Agreement and will fund activities for the National Election Commission, the Political Parties Council, the Constitutional Review Commission, and the Bureau of Statistics. till June this year. The budget was approved in a joint meeting of all four bodies in Juba yesterday and will next be presented before Cabinet for deliberation on Friday. A South African special envoy on South Sudan has called on the country's leaders to do all they can to ensure the country sees a peaceful and democratic transition of power. Ambassador Kingsley Mamambolo is leading a delegation on a 5-day official visit to South Sudan to get first-hand information on the status of the peace process and preparation for elections scheduled for December. The commissioner of Yei River County has issued an order criminalizing violent acts committed by roaming cattle herders. The order comes 2 weeks after thousands of armed pastoralists from Bor, Terekeka and the Mbororo from the Central African Republic entered Tore, causing concern among the local population. Many of the cattle keepers have begun leaving Tore Payam. Now, up to 5,000 returnees are set to benefit from a new project designed to support the reintegration of returnees in northern and western Bahr al-Ghazal states. The 3-year project that was launched in Awil on Tuesday will provide returning communities with assistance in areas of water and sanitation and training in skills to enable them to become self-reliant. That's the news headlines. The details will be coming to you at 9 exactly in English. Good morning.
Broadcasting from the heart of the nation's capital, this is Radio Miraya. 101 and 101.5 FM. Radio Miraya, the voice of peace.
Marhabekum tanwara mustamente za barnamik tena tamiraya breakfast show, of course, Annalisa Masigidam ma dupten of his studio, and we are discussing unabonis fumodu al conflict in the country, and particularly the killings that have been taking place due to communal conflicts. We've heard about the situation in Abia, we've heard about the situation, of course, that has happened as well in western Bahr al-Ghazal state, and we have been hearing in Jonglei. Not only in Jonglei, Unity State recently, we also had some violence where people were killed. So where are we heading to with all this kind of killings? Well, in the studio, we have Moses John Mande, who is the executive director of the organization Nonviolence and Development. Now, we talk to him, of course, as he shares his thoughts on what should be done in order to address the current situation in the country. Now, as we continue earlier, it's about the impunity really, and why people need to be held accountable. And before we also look at the implication of all this to the upcoming elections, now let's probably look on the issue of the guns in the hands of civilians. And you did mention that earlier, that there was a plan this year, a comprehensive plan, and you said disarming people will be the way to probably reduce some of this communal conflict. What could be the best way when it comes to the issue of disarmament? Because we've seen this happening some time back. There was some disarmament in some communities, but somehow the guns find their way back. Here in Juba, we've seen a lot of disarmament during the festive season, a lot of guns collected, and we don't know if they have gone back or they are still there until another disarmament. What best mechanism can be put in place for disarmament?
One is there has to be a strong political will, actually, to make sure that we really wanted to restore stability that will last long. And that should be the responsibility of all actors. And of course, when it comes to issues to do with safety and security of the people, that is the prime responsibility of the sitting government. Mm. We in the civil society, we are here to cooperate with the government at different levels in order to, for example, to sensitize our people, dedicate our people. Mm-hmm. Do we really need guns as civilians? What are the armed, what are the organized forces doing by mm-hmm. then? Mm-hmm. You know, so as we have been hearing from the expert of the what the Minister of Peace Building keeps on saying, that we should reach a kind of agreement with people and say, give me your gun and I will provide security for you, you know. And to me, that's a good way of doing it. People should really, the community should be assured of their safety. And actually, it is the role of the government to provide the security and safety to its own people. And therefore, the people, I don't see a reason why people should... we have seen, for example, in the past, even during Sudan, there are laws that for what? For citizens to own weapons, you know, but it has to go through a legal procedure, and you have to renew the license every year and so forth. And it's not even, I think, Zaman Dakan Bugulu Kartush, you know, it's not like automatic, you know. It is less dangerous than the automatic weapons that we see today.
Now, talking about that, and we came, of course, you mentioned about Sudan, we came, South Sudan came from a history of fighting for a very long time. And during this particular conflict, we've seen situations where even some communities were given guns to protect themselves from Binden during the liberation struggle. And the culture of gun in South Sudan is not a new culture. It has been there for a very long time. Now, civil society, don't you think it is your work as well at the moment to, first of all, disarm the men, the mind of people? I mean, I do believe that is one of the most powerful disarmament, is the mental disarmament for people to actually believe that they don't need a gun in the first place. How are we doing in that aspect of mental disarmament?
Mental disarmament actually has been there for quite some time, because when we engage with communities, we talk to them that peace is a collective responsibility. As people, we have a responsibility to make sure that our county or Buma or Payam is safe. And that's our responsibility. But of course, sometimes communities also have their arguments, you know. They also have their arguments, and those arguments need to be listened to. And that's why I'm saying what is important is the question of disarmament should start by providing, ensuring that people really have that safety, and that there has to be a rule of law, you know, and that whoever is implicated should be held accountable. Great. And that's very, very important. And of course, it will take time, because the minds of the people, once the minds of the people are prepared towards something, it will always take time for them to understand. So it is a matter of actually doing enough to make sure that people are safe, to travel freely, they are not attacked, and so forth. And with that in mind, but also with efforts being done by concerned authorities, this thing will become things of the past.
All right. Yeah. Now let's look at the broader picture now. With all this conflict taking place in the country, what are the implications for the upcoming, let's say, constitutional making process, the elections that is supposed to take place? Can these fights be contained to allow for communities to have confidence practicing their democratic rights of voting?
Of course, the implications are there. But I still want to believe that since this is a national program, there are also plans to contain those conflicts. Because they know, everybody knows that these are our challenges. Even after independence, we have been experiencing these challenges all through. Meaning, if we have such big national encounters, like constitution making elections and other implementation of the peace agreement, it means those conflicts needs to be contained so that these national activities can be undertaken, because citizens are very key in all this. If it is a constitution making, it is the citizen, not the government. Governments don't make constitution. It is the people making the constitution, because you can't make constitution for yourself in order to govern people. No, it is the people who makes the constitution, so that the constitution is used as a social contract between the people and the government.
Indeed.
You see? So it is entirely people's process. If we want a permanent constitution that is meaningful, it should be actually led by the people. The government is there actually to facilitate and to make sure that the views of the people put in a legal way and eventually adopted by the people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very important. Elections, the same thing. In elections, it is the people actually who give legitimacy. They give actually powers to specific representatives and to their leaders in order to govern them. And that power, that partial, surrendering of power to the leaders and representative is actually based on the people. It is the people's process. And therefore, our people, they are at the center of all the political processes that will that are to be undertaken in this year in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, with that in mind, people need to feel safe. One of the, for example, for the elections, one of the universal standards for free, fair, and democratic elections
mm-hmm.
is that people should feel free and safe in order to exercise this right, you know.
Yes, and the elections, of course, is supposed to take place, well, it is planned to take place in December.
Yes.
We are already 2 months into the new year.
Yes.
Probably less than 10 months that we are left with for the elections.
Yes.
The constitutional making process is not yet there. We are looking at these conflicts already taking place. Well, the constitutional making process is in the process, but we don't have a permanent constitution. As a civil society activist, do you think this is still possible actually to pull it out?
We see it as a dilemma because we have so much to do within a short time. You know, time is a resource that is always limited, you know. Like 1 year is 1 year. You cannot add even a second to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a dilemma. And that's a question that other civil society groups and even concerned authorities, including the National Election Commission, they are supposed to come with the timetable. You know, because it is from the timetable that we will know which activity is supposed to take at what date. And finally leading to election, that the polling and even the tabulation and announcement of the results and so forth and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it is through the timetable that we will know which activity is supposed to happen. But of course, for now, they have started with a budget, which is very important, because mm-hmm. if they don't have budget, whatever timetable they release cannot mm-hmm. even work.
Indeed.
You know, so the next step, once the budget is approved, the next step is the money should be released so that these concerned institutions can begin to do and implement their work. And if they are not supported and facilitated to do this work, I don't think actually much will be done. So my proposition is very important that the relevant actors, particularly the parties to the agreement, this is a question that they actually need to discuss. They need to meet and discuss. Now, here we are left with 10 months, and the elections are supposed to take place in December. How do we double efforts in order to make sure that this activity happens within the given time? The same thing with the constitution-making team.
All right. Now, you say the political parties, of course, need to sit down and discuss. Discussing, when we talk about this discussion, do you think the possibility of an extension of the current government is even on the table? Because we've heard some members of parliament already making some propositions saying these, you know, parties need to extend the time because it's not genuinely possible to have a credible election within this time when we all know a lot of things have not been done. Is that something that should be in the table as a civil society activist, of course? Or should we go ahead and have whatsoever election we want to have?
Mine, I will recommend that the parties to the revitalized peace agreement, they should meet and realistically and honestly discuss issues to do with the remaining period and what they can do. Of course, even the RRX is not only about constitution making and elections. We know the number of provisions that are supposed to be implemented before the transitional period comes to an end.
Mm-hmm.
What is going to happen with some of these provisions? And so it is very important that the parties, I don't really wanted to give my opinion about what will happen, because that is, for me, it is not too late for parties to sit and dialogue on what is it that they can do, what can they double efforts.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually our message. Ever since the roadmap was signed, we were saying parties should actually dialogue among themselves to agree on how can they double efforts in order to implement the roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that has been all our message. But what we have seen, of course, there are some meetings taking place, but very little is being put in order to move the implementation of the whole process forward. So regarding elections and constitution making, of course, for us in the civil society, we see constitution making as key, you know, because the constitution we have now is a transitional constitution. And the transitional constitution is meant for the transitional period. And if we are to go for a democratic elections, we need a permanent constitution that is actually people-centered.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, when we go for elections, the upcoming government will use that constitution in order to govern the country. So, of course, constitution is what involves all people. And therefore, at the stakeholders, they also have their views. But for us, as civil society, we feel it's important that we should actually engage. And of course, the context, even the context of this year is not the same as previous.
Hmm.
For example, we have issues to address. In the past, when we had our referendum, I think we had a support from the international community.
Yes.
Should there be no support from international community, believe me or not, it would have been difficult for us for the referendum to take place. Yes, as people, we have the will and we are ready to participate. But of course, logistically, a lot need to happen for the referendum to take place.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, our friends, they step in. And with their support, it actually complemented the role of our government by then, mm-hmm. and other stakeholders who were busy running all across the country. Issues of insecurity were not there.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we dropped from Juba to Tale, and we reached to Tale around 3:40 a.m.
A.m. in the morning.
Yes, and in every checkpoint when we reach, they just ask, where are you going? And we said we're going to this place. Who are you? And we said we are civil society. We are going for this awareness raising on referendum. And we're allowed. Nobody questioned our work. Mm.
Now, this brings us to, as we conclude this conversation here, of course, you as civil society are the representatives of the people. You talked on behalf of the ordinary citizens. And
yes.
Now, it seems like their hands are tied. The ordinary citizens, clearly from surveys, from talking to some of them, they want elections to take place. They want to choose their own representatives in the government. They also want a credible, fair, transparent elections that cannot be manipulated for whatsoever reasons. So, in this case, as representatives of the ordinary citizens, clearly, that seems a little difficult to say it can be achieved within this frame of time. The extension, the roadmap was signed. It's coming to an end, of course, as they try to go for elections. What should be the way forward for the ordinary citizens? Are their hands tied? What can they do as a citizen of the country who wants a credible election? They want to choose their own representative, but they also want a credible election. And now, here we are.
The citizen need to be at the center of any conversation to address issues to do with the elections and constitution making process. So this kind of conversation, this kind of question that you pose to me, actually are the same question that we need to pose to our people, so that the people can get engaged, and of course with that in mind, they will be able to make some suggestions. You know, when we held our referendums, there were some actual clashes all around, particularly in some areas in Jungle, and you know, those conflicts, I mean, were there. But what happened with the elections? With the referendum, the people put everything down. They said, look, we are South Sudanese. This referendum should go, and we should exercise our... Let's hope similar position can be also demonstrated by our people, that with the elections, they will say, look, this is also our opportunity. We need to express our opportunity in elections, mm-hmm. so that we can move our country forward. So that's my it could be naive, mm-hmm. but of course to me it's very important. The people of South Sudan are actually, they have learned over time. Learning is not only in school. People learn from life. There is an Arabic proverb, they said Haya Madrasa. Mm-hmm. Life is a school by itself.
Mm-hmm.
So even today, when we look at Juba, people live because of experience. And that's education by itself. And our people are actually are getting more matured when it comes to civic issues. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we call through you, we want to call to the people of South Sudan that actually this year is very critical in our political history. And it's very important that as citizens, we should cooperate to make sure that there is peace. Because it is only through peace that we can be able to undertake the constitution-making process, participate in elections, and other implementation of the provisions of the Revitalized Peace Agreement.
All right. Mr. Mande, just before I let you go, what will be your final remarks and message out there that you'd like to send? And please, Anna Wenis Ketir by English, Kalas Munkin Tabagda Rasul by Arabic.
Risala vitae le akwana bitana fi Twitch wa fi ABA ina simina al-Haj al-Hasal ina biguli no whatever happen ina madarin blame game lano ina zati mafi finas kitir mafi himu asaba bzatu bita communal clashes disunu izan aja alena darin negul awal haja al-kital de yegif nimiritnin anaza to al two communities kelim yogodo ishuf al sabab bita khilafat de shunu hal khilafat de mamu kene helu bidun manasi shakulu mm-hmm. lani jubela na guta kwez inu nasabie de nas bitana musu muna stwich ayi gebi au community fi junub sudan bishuf abie de da kwanum ikhwatum ubitali umuhtajin le solidarity and support mm-hmm. ina magari nushuf de zaman munasi besheni kunfi ayi conflict between masalan communities mm-hmm. bitana fi junub sudan so ina derin ikunfi salam ikunfi istigrar wena ka communities kenina la abdor bitatna esheni nekder shinu nawafir al istigrar le belad bitatna kasan fi senada muhim khalis lano mm-hmm. fi baramij kitir ina mufrud na amul kamu watnin وبرامج ده عشان التيم لازم عايز السلام واستقرار منا نكا مواطنين فده ده رساله بتاعي لكل واحد بالنسبه للزملاء بتاعي في سيفل سوسايتي انا بقول ليت اس نوت جيف اب كلنا نواصل مبادرات بتاعتنا لانه احنا قريبين من مجتمع دل نكلمهم عشان هم يقدر شنو يشتغل من اجل السلام والاستقرار في مناطق ما بس في مناطق الفيو نزاعات حاسة لكن في مناطق في جنوب السودان كله
ولسياسين او لبوليتيشنز
لسياسين انا بيقول انه يعني كان انتخابات جاي مفروض انت تجهز نفسك لانتخابات برنامج بتاعك شنو تجي تكلمنا leave communities alone distance yourself from communities and to the government I want to say if at all any politician is implicated for issues with the community kelishilufi mahakama kalasa ende na mahakama ina kelishilufi mahakama so that our people can have rest kalas almod bita junubi bi asir la ay junubi lana ihna fi nihaya shab wahid yani ihna min nahya bita population ina kama fi nihaya kulu ya fi inade fi ina kulu ya 13 million kalas ina darin junub da yani population bitao igile shen jirani iji stelemu wala shunu ina darin population bita junubi zide shen shab bita beleda yakder shunu yemsik beledum zema bagi shiob gadi nemsik beledum yani.
Alright. Yeah. Moses John, shukran gazilan, thank you so much for coming to Mirai Studios. We do appreciate your time.
Thank you.